Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Take a Stab at It. I'm your host, John Hoyer, and with me is...
Jason Bartsch, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe we are continuing the trend of having guests on that are smarter than you and me, right?
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
They make us look better.
So she's a contributor from such film blogs as The Farsighted, Talk Film Society, and Ghastly Grinning. Rachel Housechild, everyone.
Welcome.
Did I get your last name right?
You did. I mean, okay. A lot of people butcher it. I just, at this point, I don't even care. If you say it, I'm cool with it.
People get Hoyer wrong, and I, like, low-key hate it. So
Sadie will sometimes say it wrong, and I have to correct her. I'm like, seriously, like, never say that around John. Like,
as long as you spell my name right, I'm more keen to that, because that gets butchered every time. Mm.
We finally have you on the podcast, and this is great.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, John's been talking about it for a while.
Yeah. So Rachel and I, for those that might be interested, our friendship dates back to Tumblr.
Good old Tumblr years.
Yeah. Where she was talking about having seen Spring Breakers way before it came out. And I was like, wait, you saw it? How was it? And like, we kind of became friends after that. And since then, I mean...
Well, we then realized that we were actually close in proximity.
Yeah. And which is so bizarre.
Yeah, we're like, hey, you want to go to an Arcade Fire concert? So we did that.
Nice.
The one where you had to like dress up that you were at prom. That was so fun, though. It was a blast.
I think I kind of was a little bit of a slack ass about that, but it was still very cool. Yeah, you just threw it to me like, oh, hey, do you want to do this thing? I was like, yes. That'd be so cool.
So you were originally an East Coaster, but then mm-hmm. you transplanted to the West Coast, but now you're coming back? Is that what's happening?
Yes. I lived outside of Philly in Bucks County, Warminster, Pennsylvania, and then moved to Reno, Nevada in 2019, and then lived there for a year, and then now we're in Truckee, California. After a year, we're moving again to hopefully around Nashville, Tennessee. So we're looking at places right now. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, headed back closer to the east, which would be nice. I miss the food a lot. Mm-hmm.
Tennessee is really cool too.
Yeah,
so. I've never been anywhere, but I've been to Tennessee, and it's
cheaper.
John
than
and I road tripped to Nashville.
Nashville's like one of my favorite cities, I think.
Yeah, that was awesome.
After being to so many of them, like San Francisco and LA and New York, and you know all the big ones, and Chicago, and Nashville's like.
There's nothing quite like it. I mean,
agreed.
There's some streets you could walk around in Chicago or New York and they just kind of feel generic. And Nashville's got this character to it, like citywide. It's awesome.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. I love it so much.
All right. So let's move on to what we've been watching. Jason, what have you been watching?
So I've been working pretty late and have not had a chance to watch a lot. And I don't think anybody wants to hear me talk about watching World Series of Poker reruns. But I did, and I'm opening myself up to scolding. I did watch half of The Deer Hunter the other night. And
half is better than nothing.
I just started it late. I was falling asleep. Not a great movie to start when you're falling asleep. But I was like, yeah, I just want something late night to watch. I hadn't seen it. And I'm like an hour and a half into it. I'm like, so like, am I close? And I like looked at, and it was like, I wasn't even halfway through the film. And so I put it on pause, but yeah, it's some heavy stuff. I didn't realize, like, I knew about the like Russian roulette scene. I didn't realize it happened like in the middle of the movie. I thought that was like the climax of the movie, but maybe it is too. I don't know.
I just like the idea that you're like, maybe this will turn around. Things will end up very good for all of these characters.
I like the beginning when they're all like celebrating and stuff.
I love like that blue collar stuff. Like they're all just like buddies and stuff. I don't know. I'll button up so I don't ruin anything.
John is king of the pseudo spoiler. it's like this isn't a spoiler, but and then insert a spoiler.
You will take the general premise of a movie and think that's a spoiler. So
sometimes you take some liberties.
I reject your premise.
All right. So anyway, tune in next week to see if I finished it. I don't know what the odds are. 50-50 maybe. John, what have you been watching?
Okay, so I watched a couple of movies that are pretty interesting. Maniac Cop 1 and 2. So for those that don't know,
okay, I'm one of them.
I
am the audience right now.
Okay. So this director, William Lustig, he's made a bunch of like kind of horror slash exploitation kind of movies. And these ones are a little bit more a little sillier. It's about a cop who is murdered, or supposedly murdered, because he did some bad stuff and he went to prison and they killed him in prison. And now he's back for revenge. And he goes around and you think, oh, is he going around killing scumbags or something like that? No, he kills good people now. And the cops are scared because now people are afraid when they see cops because they think they're the maniac cop. So they will attack police thinking it's the maniac cop coming after them. So you would think, oh, this is some interesting social commentary. It is mostly just playing with that just for fun. I don't think it takes it too seriously, the stuff. It's just like, oh, we get to have some cool set pieces and whatnot. So Maniac Cop 1, it's got Tom Atkins in it, Bruce Campbell, both great. Tom Atkins, though, I think, honestly, it might be one of his best acting performances. And I just love that guy. Maniac Cop 2 is, it's interesting because it's like the Godfather 2 of this series, where it's like, it's more ambitious than the first one. So some people say, oh, it's better than the first, but other people think the first one's better. So it's kind of a debate there. Much like the Godfather, apparently Maniac Cop 3 is not very good. So
no, they're so close to a perfect trilogy.
The Maniac Cop trilogy. But apparently they're making a Maniac Cop TV series on HBO with Nicholas Winding Refn. I know Rachel's not a huge fan of.
Well, you're probably going to get your social commentary that you missed in the original films.
Oh, yeah.
Now.
With a lot of neon. A lot of slow-mo, probably, too. You know, listen, Rachel's not a believer, and that's fine. I'm not saying Nicholas Winding Refn's high art or anything, but he makes my dumb brain happy. So I guess that's all that matters. But anyway, all right. So Rachel, what have you been watching recently?
Well, my boyfriend started a new job, so our movie watching has decreased tenfold. So we started the sports documentary, The Last Dance, on Netflix, which is very good. It's very, very good. But I've been watching a lot of action movies in general, just trying to get into the genre more than I was mm-hmm. prior, which I have advanced very much so in the past year. And rewatching things, comfort movies lately, basically, since I'm on vacation this week. I'm like, I don't really feel like watching anything new. So it's like, I Love You, Man, Almost Famous.
Yeah.
I could watch I Love You, Man. I can't tell you how many times in a row. Same with Almost Famous, but... Yeah, that's so pretty much what I've been watching. Nothing too crazy. Nothing nice. Horror lately. I mean, obviously, I rewatched Year Next, and and then I watched The Clowfish Killer, which I would not recommend at all. It's on Netflix, but don't even bother.
Is there anything ridiculous that happens in there that you're like, this is...
Oh, yeah. It's just like everything's given away too early in the movie. And then you're just kind of like, all right.
This just came out, right? Like a couple days ago?
I think recently? It came out on Netflix a couple days ago, but I think it's a movie from like 2018, 2017, something like that, I think.
Gotcha.
But what's his name? Dylan McDermott, I think, is the lead. And I forget the lead boy in it, but yeah, it's just kind of boring. I mean, that's really what it comes to.
Like, I mean, yeah. Netflix has an interesting way of releasing films and tricking people into thinking that they're new Netflix films when they're when like someone else made them 3 years ago or something.
Wasn't that show, there's like that TV series You that was like, mm-hmm. it was on, it was on another channel. I can't remember what it was. Maybe was it Lifetime? I can't remember. It was something.
I thought it was Netflix. I don't know.
So they put out the first season on Netflix, acted like it was new on a new show on Netflix because they picked it up for season two instead of whatever the channel was that it was originally aired on. So like, they're just like, no, it's ours. We've had this the whole time.
Netflix marketing is terrible.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's got the little red N in the corner. Can't you see that?
Of course. <It's ours>. But yeah, like anytime there's like a good movie that Netflix acquires, that'll be like the one that they don't like really like talk about. And then it'll kind of just like not win any awards, not get any sort of, people won't talk about it. And you're like, come on, man, this was a good one.
Netflix has the greatest marketing as like A24 has great marketing, which they don't. They're terrible. First Reform deserved Oscars.
Oh my God. Yeah. At least it got nominated for best screenplay.
Yeah. So you mean marketing their films as in like the awards circuit, not
just
to
in
the
general,
public?
Like it's not very good. They're very pick and choosy, which drives me crazy. Like if you're putting out a movie, tell people about it.
What was it? Moonlight, you know, won best picture, you know, kind of. But like,
oh my God, like, I never forget.
But like, it won Best Picture, and it was like one of the least seen Best Picture winners in like the history.
That was A24?
Yeah.
That was an A24.
Well, all right. So let's move on to Your Next.
Woot woot.
All right. So the synopsis of Your Next. A dysfunctional family reunion at a remote Missouri vacation home is suddenly interrupted by a trio of masked killers. As the family members are picked off one by one, the motives behind the brutal murders become increasingly apparent. So I gotta say, I love this one. I watched it last night for the first time. And, well, let's backtrack a little bit. I went to start it last night.
Paused
and
it.
I got halfway through. I haven't finished a single movie for this podcast. Don't tell John. So I started watching it and I'm like 15 minutes in and like, you know, it stops buffering. The stream stops. I'm like, okay, whatever. I just like restarted. It happens sometimes. And then like none of my internet's working. And this is the only way I have to watch this movie. And I didn't have time today to watch it. And I'm like, what is happening? Spend 30 minutes on a chat with Comcast, who finally tells me that there's an outage that won't be fixed until 6 a.m. So I, as a true co-host, sucked it up and with my 10% phone battery, watched the entire movie on my phone before I went to bed.
How it's truly intended.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Christopher Nolan shot himself after doing that.
So when I think I need to renegotiate my contract and maybe require a Blu-ray of every movie. And while we're at it, I want a contract. I don't have a contract.
Yeah.
But
no, never.
But yeah, no, I was a big fan of this one. This is one of my favorites from the series so far. I mean, it has it all. It's a home invasion movie, it's a slasher movie, it's a family dramedy, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. John, you're a fan too, right?
Okay. Yeah. So, all right. I'm going to have to admit, I haven't seen this movie since theaters. And one of the reasons for that was when I saw it in theaters, it was such a great experience. Like, I wasn't at like a festival or anything. It was just like normal, you know, normal movie showing. And when I was there, it was like everyone was into it. Like, all like the big like set pieces like really worked on people. You'd hear people gasping. Or like people cheering at certain moments we'll get to later. And I loved it. And I ended up just not really rewatching it because I was worried that it would somehow like diminish that experience or something. But, you know, so it's been like a number of years and I watched it last night and oh man, did I love it. Still good. Still holds up.
I picture you watching this in theaters and like, not being sure like what people are thinking of it yet and just kind of like sitting back while everyone cheers. And then when you just rewatched it, I picture you just getting all the cheers out of your system. Like,
oh,
yeah.
I was scaring my cats. Yeah. I was just screaming at the TV. It was so much fun. You know, it still whips ass. You know, that's my opinion. Rachel, what are your thoughts on Your Next?
It's one of my comfort horror movies, and I know that sounds oxymoronish, but it really is. It's definitely on the list, and I think it's because I'm so deeply engrossed in that cast and I love them so much, from director to like everybody in the cast, I just love the way that it flows. And obviously it's a final girl situation, so it's something that I look forward to, especially a woman leading in horror movies. It's a big thing for me. So I just love everything about the script. Is great too, because it is.
Yeah.
So when I saw it the first time, I didn't really think much of some of the who the actors were. And now that like I'm a little bit more tapped into like it's like a who's who of like cool horror Twitter personalities, like, I mean, I'm pretty sure most of the cast probably follows you on Twitter or something. I know you're very friendly with a few of the people on there. You used to be particularly obsessed with AJ Bowen.
Oh, I still am. 100%.
So I was kind of like processing that through my head while I was watching. I was like, oh, there's Rachel's friends, you know?
Ty West, Mr. Delaware.
Oh, yeah.
I got to meet him, by the way. Or if you're not surprised.
Who haven't you met?
Who haven't you met?
I met Ty West at the Sacrament.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
It was at TIFF in Toronto. So
that's awesome.
I need him to come back and make some movies again. Because
he's got a movie. Yeah, he's got a movie coming out. It's called X, and it stars, oh my God, who is in it? Kid Cudi's in it, I think.
Whoa. That's cool.
Mia Goth is in it. Two other people that I don't remember. But yeah, he's coming back. That's what I tweeted when I was rewatching. I was like, Ty West, please come back to directing movies. I miss him so much.
And for our listeners, Ty West also directed another film we did on the pod, right? The House of the Devil, correct?
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So one of the other things we should mention, the sun killer in House of the Devil that we made fun of is also the sun in this one that's... little bit of a weenie in this.
And you better believe we'll be making fun of him again.
Rachel, don't be mad at us.
Did you meet him too?
I've talked to him online before. Wow. For sure.
All right. Well, we won't say anything.
He's seen her fangirling a bit.
For sure. I'm pretty sure he sent me like a happy Valentine's Day and I screenshot it like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And I'm like,
whoa.
Okay.
He seems really nice. Not like his character in this movie.
Oh, God, his character's the worst. He's such a pansy.
I know. I was trying to think about it. I was like, why do I like hate his character more than the other brother, Felix? Because Felix is more like more reprehensible because he's like integral to like the killing.
Yeah.
But whereas, what's his name? Crispin, kind of a weenie Crispin, name.
What a name.
Yeah.
I noticed some of these names though, like of the kids, it's like Felix, Drake, Crispin, and like Amy Simons.
Amy Simons is Amy.
Yeah, with like two E's. So it's like a little annoying, like a more annoying version of her name.
Oh, I love her so much though.
She's so good.
I just love her. She's so good in everything. And it's like your next is like that little group of horror people. Cause in the beginning when it opens, it's Caitlin Scheel is in it, which Caitlin Scheel is in Amy Simons' most recent movie.
She was also, they also did Sun Don't Shine, which was also a pretty good movie.
With Kentucker Audley. And AJ Bowen, he's in that.
Oh yeah, and you know all of them. So like one thing I always appreciate is Rachel has like more of an encyclopedic knowledge of this stuff than I do. So like by comparison, I seem like I'm slacking when we talk. It's like, oh, what's that name? This and she's like, oh, boom, they did this movie together. Then this. Keep up.
John's getting a taste of how I feel every episode. this will be good for you.
So one of the things that I liked about this movie is that this is almost like a precursor to like, I would say a dynamic that we see, you know, more readily in like the world today of the, you know, rich family with fail sons that don't really live up to the reputation of their parents. And we got Crispin and Felix, and they feel like they're owed something, and they have none of the charisma or personality of their parents or talent, let's say. So we have that, and this movie kind of has a nice little like focus on like the economic reality of things. So you have like a rich family, then the main character, Erin, she seems to be someone who's much more like blue collar than the rest of the people there, as well as the killers are, they seem to be, I think it's implied or overtly stated that they're veterans who are hired to kill the family. And so they seem much more in like a financially precarious position.
That's a good point.
For being ex-vets, they're not that good. They're not that good at trying to kill everybody.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, Erin, well, that's another thing. So let's talk about this. I love the character of Erin in this, where, so usually like the final girl in what we've kind of talked about thus far in like slasher films, it's kind of like someone who gets pushed into a position where they eventually have to like kind of like summon up like the courage or whatever, or their survival skills to fight back or survive the encounter. And it's like, this is like 20 minutes in, the attack starts, and then she's like, all right, let's go. Let's do this. Okay, we're going to take care of this.
This is the moment she's been waiting for. Not waiting for, not anticipating, but
she's preparing
preparing for her, her whole life. And it's interesting, too, is because normally with the final girl, it's like one-on-one. And here, like, it ends up being like, you know, one-on-three. You know, she's running the show. It's like, you know, she is a variable that they did not plan for. So that makes her a little unique.
And plus, because all these other characters are very rich, like they grew up in a rich family, they're more sheltered, they are more at a disadvantage of like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Should we call the butler? I don't know. Like,
that's how I picture a really like wealthy out of touch family reacting to a situation like this. It's just like, they would have all been dead in 5 minutes if Aaron wasn't there. Like, this would have been a very short movie.
I feel like it's a slasher movie. It's probably more of a, I think people would categorize it as like a home invasion movie, which is kind of a offshoot of slashers. But what I think kind of makes it become seem more like a slasher film compared to other home invasion movies is that we have the Erin character as like a final girl, and then it's intentionally going against expectations as the film progresses. And to the point where I think at a certain point, maybe halfway or more, it becomes more about her as almost like she's the slasher killer because she's getting all the bad guys and like attacking them.
Yeah.
And like she's like the force to be reckoned with. And I just think that's so interesting. That's so fun.
Yeah, it's certainly a dynamic we haven't seen yet in any of the films we've watched, but it's like it's naturally progressed towards this, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's just a strong character as a whole, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's really well written.
Yeah, she very much is. And Sharni Vinson, who plays her, is just spot on.
Is she actually British or
Australian? Whatever,
Australian?
Yeah, I thought so.
I think she's Australian. Australian.
How much did you get angry when Drake and Kelly are kind of shit-talking her? Like later on when they're in the bathroom and Kelly's like making fun of her accent. I was like, you shut up. How dare you?
Kelly's such a weak character just in general. I didn't like her. And no. I have this thing where it's like, I don't know, where some of the female characters, this might make me sound so terrible, but some of the female characters that continue to scream and continue to yell in movies, I'm like, just get rid of them. I'm done with that. I'm tired. So, and she's married to, oh gosh, Joe Swanberg in the movie, which I love Joe Swanberg.
He plays that role so well, though. Like, just this, like, passive-aggressive kind of dick.
Oh, he's one of those characters. There are some times where I was, like, laughing at what he's saying, and then there's other times where I'm like, oh, man, you so deserve a slap across the face at this part right here.
Yeah, his, like, little interaction with the filmmaker at dinner is just, like,
Oh my God.
The underground film festival conversation. It's so good.
Well, they also play with expectations a little bit in this movie because it's like he's a dick to his brother, but also like when push comes to shove, like he did like jump in front of the arrow that was going to go into his mother.
His mom.
So like he is like he does do some heroic things, even though he is a little bit of a fuck up in other regards later. But
his mom, the most wonderful woman in
Barbara
heart.
Crampton.
Oh my God, I love her.
She had a new movie come out. What was it called? Jacob's Wife, I think.
Yeah. I
heard that's really good.
A vampire movie, but we haven't seen it yet. It's on our, we put it on our Prime queue though.
Oh, another thing I thought was cool about the movie is how I noticed when kind of watching it this time, how much a lot of the film is very like, it's very like action driven or like events are occurring and they're reacting to them as they occur. So it's like this movie moves, man. Like
it's
I thought
yeah.
It is cool to have, you know, a character like Aaron be someone who reacts in a way not just the way you think you would react, but actually smarter than how you would
That's true. Normally it's like they work their way up to being smart enough and she's like smart enough the whole time. So normally the horror film gives us a little bit of time to kind of be a little holier than thou for a little bit.
Oh, no, like this is like
I wouldn't have done that.
Cat and mouse from the beginning.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I think like the visually the way the film kind of progresses too, the way they do the like a lot of the shots in this, it's so I don't know. I find it to be very visually interesting and visceral. And it kind of reminded me a bit of like Mad Max Fury Road and how like it's very like the visual of it is like what is driving the plot in a way, and that I find it so amazing.
It's got a really good score too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. It really does. It doesn't get like super like synthy at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
very synthy. That worked really especially well. Towards like the third act, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I like the progression of that.
Yeah, it starts out with an actual song, which I have the vinyl and I love the vinyl so much, the Mondo version. And then it gets really synthy towards the end.
Yeah. That was awesome. And John, you're right. There are a lot of really cool shots in this. Like, you know, as I was kind of reflecting back on it, I was like, man, there's like they just utilize the masks and the lighting really well. And, mm-hmm. you know, the light coming through the little keyhole that one time, like, you know,
stuff
like that is just, it's really cool. It's kind of like an exaggerated, if you're hiding in a room or in a closet, you know, the light coming through that little keyhole is going to feel very bright. It's going to feel mm-hmm. like it's making you vulnerable. And for them to capture something like that, with a shot, it's no easy feat. And I don't know, they did a really nice job.
And there was also a few shots that I liked that they were like allusions to other slasher films. There's one point where it's referencing like Halloween, where one of the killers sits down and kind of tilts his head looking at the corpse. And I was like, oh, Michael Myers. There's another one with like Texas Chainsaw. You know, they have a lot of allusions to other slashers. And I don't know, I appreciate that because it's kind of like a different mode than say like Scream or Behind the Mask, where those are more satirical. This is kind of more of a straightforward, kind of more of a visceral kind of thing. But also they're making these references as well that are kind of like winking at the camera, but it's also not like taking away from the experience that it's trying to like create.
Yeah, yeah. Winking at the camera is a good way to put it, I think. Like it's not straight satire, but it's aware.
Yeah.
It's aware.
And I think that's what makes Simon Barrett so good as he is. And especially teaming up with Wingard, they do this all the time. Like they know each other. They know what they want. And Barrett's extremely smart. So seeing how it's all been panned out from, you know, his creativity, it shows.
And also, I mean, I've kind of been harping on the intensity of this movie, but also it's pretty funny.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like I said, that Underground Film Festival comment killed me the first time I saw it. I was like, what? It's the only thing I kept thinking about. What do they do? Show films underground?
I mean, I relate to that. Anytime I would talk about film stuff with a family, they would be like, there'd be this passive aggressive kind of talk about that. And, you know, this didn't happen in the film, but what I might have related to a little bit more is if they had maybe had an uncle of sorts who decided to explain the whole plot of a movie after you've just said you've seen the movie and it's one of your favorite movies. So dealing with big families at dinner.
What John's trying to say is like he didn't really pick up on the dysfunctional family aspect of this film at first. That was second viewing is when that became more apparent.
Just it seemed like actually they got along too well. Actually,
why is family so nice to each other? This doesn't feel right.
Oh, you can ignore passive aggressive comments. That's fine. If they're yelling at you, that's when you have to deal with it.
The family needs to be talking like 8 octaves higher than normal for it to be family dinners. What'd you say?
And talk about each other like they're not in the room.
Oh, yeah.
You know what your brother did? You know what your son said?
And the person's over there like, yeah, I know what I did.
Or the best move is to skip the person and ask someone else to hand you the mashed potatoes or something. That's the move that you bring out every now and then.
So let's dig into the plot of the film. The first thing we see is a couple having sex, and, you know, the lady seems to be having a fun time with that.
Which is Caitlin Scheel and Larry Fessenden, who I love, Larry Fessenden. But I don't know about that scene.
I just liked, she like does this slow little tap on his back, like, okay.
You're done, buddy. All right,
that's enough.
But there's no better horror person to have, though, than Larry Fessenden. If you haven't seen any of his stuff or like any of his works in general, highly recommended.
I think this is the only thing I've seen of his so far, at least that I know of.
He did a really wonderful version of like a vampire movie called Depraved. I think it's called Depraved. I have to double check on that one for you. And then there's, he's the owner of Glasside Picks Productions. So he does a lot of movie stuff and everything. He started the career of Mickey Keating, who's a horror director, and he is best friends with Kelly Reichardt. So he is in, what is it? Greener Grass? Grass is Greener or something like that. It's like one of Kelly's first films.
Leaves of Grass, I think.
Is that what it is? Yeah. And then he has a cameo in Wendy and Lucy, but I love him.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they he goes and takes a shower, and she goes downstairs. He comes downstairs from the shower, and then she's dead, and it's in blood. It's written, "You're next." And then he gets killed. And I did think about this. Now, I'm not saying that these killers don't know what they're doing, but if you're going to plan to kill someone within 10 seconds anyway, do you really need to put in the work to write "You're next" for like just a little scare? And then they look at that and then you're like, you're dead.
It's a calling card.
Like, that's got to take a lot of effort.
And we saw later that they mopped off the blood. So that was literally just like, you know, I mean, maybe they feel like artists about
that,
it. I don't
that would
know.
Have been a funny addition to Behind the Mask is like him just with like a magic eraser, just like, for like 15 minutes trying to wipe it off.
My original thought on that whole scene, though, in general, I was like, do we really have to kill them? Like, but then I realized like, okay, maybe they did because they are close. I don't even know how close, because they are not like right next door neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I was wondering that too. Why did they kill them? Were they bored? Were they just warming up? Nobody paid them to do that.
I thought about the warming up thing. I was like, maybe they're just trying to get their bearings and figure out like, oh, you know, I'm an ex-vet, got to get back into it and try out how to kill people. So that's I thought.
Well, we realized later that they're actually were staying in the other, the main house. So at first I thought, well, maybe they're just kind of their base of operations is in that house. But I mean, it doesn't seem like they really stay there ever again.
If they're
going to
kill them, why didn't they kill them right away? Just stay there in the whole house and then not have to pee in bottles.
In secret cubbies in the house.
Also, why not use the toilet? Like,
very true.
If they were there before they got there.
Yeah, because God forbid, like the family comes in, they're like, oh, the toilet's been flushed.
This
like,
has
how
been
will
flushed.
You know? Has a bit, did you put in like a tidy bowl and it's blue since the last time you were there and now it's not? Why is it green? No. They didn't flush. Yeah.
I'm now imagining like one of them is like a neat freak and he's like cleaning the bowl and, you know, like, well, we can't leave this a mess. And they're like, stop it. It's supposed to be like a rundown place that they haven't used in a while. Like, anyway, so we cut to Paul and Aubrey Davidson, the patriarch and matriarch of the family. They arrive at their vacation home and they hear a noise upstairs. Paul decides to go check it out and he runs into his son, Crispin, who also arrived shortly after. So that night later when Barbara Crampton's character, Aubrey, she's going to, I think she's getting a glass of water or something. We see like kind of a view from outside the window watching her. And then we get a little reflection of one of the characters with one of the masks on. And it like just kind of appears in the right corner. And it reminded me of Halloween when Michael, his mask kind of appears in the right corner behind Jamie Lee Curtis. So I thought that
it's
was
a lot like that. Might even be an homage to that. It's a good point.
Probably is.
This Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett, they seem to know what they're doing.
One of the masked characters is Simon Barrett.
Yeah, that's...
I just can't remember which mask he is.
Tiger
he's
mask.
Okay.
He's the one that gets killed first. So...
Hi, Barrett.
Yeah, Simon Barrett. He was like, well, I'll have one of the easier roles. I'll get killed off halfway through. I don't need to.
I only wrote it.
He's not
it.
Cocky. Yeah. All right. So then the next day, the rest of the family shows up. So we got Drake and his wife, Kelly. They're awful, as we've mentioned earlier. Felix and his girlfriend, Z. Total weirdos.
Oh, yeah.
And then we get Amy and her boyfriend, Tariq, which I guess she's kind of like seen
bless
as.
Bless them. Honestly,
I think she's like supposed to be kind of a little bit of a daddy's girl, and he seems totally normal. I don't know. Yeah. you know, Ty West, he's a cool guy. I like him. So
with his little scarf.
His little filmmaker scarf. I
like
that.
It was like the, just a subtle like little affectation that's like, oh, he's a little fancy
posh.
Boy.
He's a little above this whole dinner, probably.
Yeah. But at least like he doesn't he's not someone who's like a dick enough that it's like known that he feels this way. It's just like, yeah, you kind of assume maybe he's not.
Well, he's got a lot of other dicks in the room to kind of level him out.
Oh, yes.
Well, like we mentioned earlier, there's the, so, you know, we get to the dinner scene and then we get Drake asking Tariq about his filmmaking career and the underground film festival. And then he keeps telling him about like, yeah, it seems like the commercials, that's where it's at.
That's where it's at. I love commercials. It's the only thing I watch TV for now is the commercials.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't even watch the shows. The commercials are better than shows. Well, when Ty West, Tariq is trying to like...
And he's just sitting there like...
Explain that he does documentaries and then he's just like, I like commercials.
He does documentaries. Oh, okay. Well, commercials.
Commercials. Documentary the commercials. Form of the art.
I've seen them before, haven't I?
And then it escalates. He then brings up Crispin's girlfriend, Erin, and then asks about, like, oh, how did you two meet? And it's like, well, she was a TA for one of my classes. And then, like, he just keeps prodding away and he just mentions, like, she seems unprofessional. And I love how the way he says that too after that is like, he goes, you just said it seems unprofessional. He goes, I was agreeing with you. And he's like, I didn't say that.
Don't they bring it up like a little bit prior to that too, or like about Erin? Because like the dad and Drake and Crispin are all grilling. And then mm-hmm. somebody mentioned something about Erin and they're like, oh, it's probably a student or something like that. I think.
Yeah.
He's got a reputation.
I think it was also, there's like the Drake and Kelly were talking and they were like, she seems pretty young. I wonder if she just graduated or if she's still a student.
That's where it was.
And, you know, so you get this kind of vibe, I guess, that Crispin's kind of not successful, number one. And then, you know, him being.
Well, he's trying to get published too.
Oh, yeah. So I think there's a fellowship that he didn't get that he mentions to his father. So like he's not succeeding in any way close to, I guess, what his father did, who I think it's mentioned earlier that the father worked for a military contractor or something. He did marketing for them.
It was like a defense contractor or something, but which is ironic because he seems shockingly unprepared to defend the house when everyone shows up.
Like, you did marketing, I guess. Yeah.
What did those pictures look like that I did the graphic design for?
So anyway, so like, Crispin and Drake, they're arguing at the dinner table, and then Tariq sees something outside, and then he walks to the window, and I love this slow reveal that they have that's going on, where it's like, you see the arrow go through the window, they don't show you it goes into Tariq yet, but you see everyone arguing, and then they all slowly realize something's amiss, and then the camera tilts up just when everyone's aware of it, and you just see the arrow right through his head, and he's just standing there like, I don't know, nodding around a little bit, then he drops. I was like, that's disturbing, man.
It's funny because it takes everyone a while to realize it. They're all so self-absorbed with their own issues that like you can hear the arrow shoot through the glass and break the glass, and like it just takes a little while for everyone to turn around because they all got to get the last word in. And it is
that would probably
reveal.
Be like a family dinner for my family. Like if that happened, we would not pay attention until we're like, wow, so-and-so is quiet.
I'll get the broom.
Why is there broken glass? Who broke glass? And then you realize like, oh, God.
Is this blood?
It's sticking staining my carpet.
You gotta blot it. So
literally what would happen.
And so after this occurs, they all like one by one try to get out of the dining room by like putting a chair in front of them as they run away. As we mentioned earlier, Drake actually covers his mother, so he gets shot in the back with an arrow.
He has some morals, a little bit. But also, why would you stand in front of a window after an arrow just came through a window through your daughter's boyfriend's forehead?
Yeah, I would just think you would just crawl or something, like crawl out of the way.
Oh, I'd be army crawling.
Why do they all feel the need to run like as close to the window as possible to run across from it? Just go to the other side of the room.
But at that moment in time is like when Aaron's like survival skills kick in, because you can even hear her. She's like, go, 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 get down, get down. Yeah. I'm like, dang, girl. Okay, okay.
Yep. She wasted no time.
No time at all.
It is funny and it is interesting how, like, that can, how, like, social dynamics of something like that, where because Aaron is being more overtly, like, telling people what to do, it becomes like all of a sudden she's the one they all listen to immediately. It's not like, who are you or whatever. It's just like, okay, yeah, sure. And then she's like, she just runs it after that, yeah. Basically.
The instinct kicks in big time.
Although they don't listen to her when she says, don't go out of the house. And I think the next scene they have where, like, Amy is like, no, I'll run to the car. And it's like, no, please don't.
It's the saddest thing.
What a crazy scene.
Oh my gosh. First of all, I'm surprised that they should have put that, like, slow-mo music, like, you're running to the finish line, that music. I don't want to sing it because that'd be terrible.
What, like, Chariots of Fire?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then all of a sudden music stops and she's on the floor gasping for her life because she's dying.
That's a really great sequence of shots. So basically she's going to run outside. They're going to open the door and she's going to sprint out because she's the fastest in the family. And they made sure to get a little argument in right before she runs out about who's the fastest.
because Crispin can't do it.
It's so good.
And so there's this really cool slow motion sequence where she's running out the door. And then what happens is she actually gets clotheslined by, like, razor wire and it, like, slits her throat. It's like neck level when she runs out. But the way it's edited, it's very jarring because it's like you're kind of finding out what happened to her as the family does, like the way that it's edited, because it's almost like as I was watching it on my phone, it was really chaotic. Like, you see her just kind of fall back and you're like, what happened? How did throat get slit? I thought there was, like, a new weapon or somebody was right outside. And then you slowly see the wire, that really cool shot of the wire with the blood dripping off of it.
But, oh gosh, it's so chilling.
Yeah.
It makes you kind of reflect on it a little bit. And it's kind of like, yeah, they put the wire there, but also, like, she did it herself. You know what I mean? Like, if she would have been, like, just a couple extra seconds of, like, strategy, it wouldn't have happened. So it's
who brings up the running? It's one of them that's in on it, right? Because if you just walked out, that you'd be like, oh, whoa, what's that? Like, it had to be, like, a full speed thing. Like, doesn't one of them bring up, like, oh, you got to run, we'll open the door?
I can't remember who brings it up.
Okay, so then Aaron starts taking charge and then everyone's, like, listening to her because it's like, well, she didn't tell anyone to go outside the house and, you know, look what happened. So she starts directing everyone. Paul takes Aubrey upstairs to her bed and leaves her there. And she's, like, crying on the bed. And then we get this, like, slow reveal of Fox Mask just comes out from under the bed and he just has a machete and then he just kills her. And the sequence of these events, though, is so, like, one after the other. It's just, like, set piece, set piece, set piece. And, like, it just feels so intense, like, how all this stuff is going on.
Well, what I like is they'll mix in these really cool, unique kills with, like, more of a straightforward kill to kind of keep it moving. So it's not, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. They're sprinkled in well. Like, you know, we go from the razor wire scene to, like, the machete scene. We're still almost even, like... you know, trying to analyze what we just saw. And then it's like, okay, on to the next one. So I thought that was an interesting use of,
and it's a utilization of almost, like, any kind of weapon that you can think of, minus probably a gun. Mm-hmm. You got like the bow and arrow, the machete, the razor wire, and some other unique tools to kill people, like a blender.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yes. That's why I was like, should I give it away now?
But there's so many good kills in this. Okay, so the family runs upstairs and then they see the sign, you're next, on there. You know, the killers are playing the hits, you know. And so Kelly was in the room, goes into the room with the mom, and then she sees one of the killers under the bed, and then she just books it out of there. Runs out, goes to the other neighbor's house. The killer just punches her through the glass. And then, was he take a machete to her? No, takes an axe to her.
Axe.
Then he sits down on the sofa next to the other dead body, and then he just kind of tilts his head, looking at his work. Very chilling.
It's very creepy.
Kind of funny, but chilling.
Kind of has a Stranger's vibe to it.
Yes, yes.
And a nod to Halloween, the little head turn that you love, John. The little.
It's just so weird. It's so uncomfortable. So then we get Crispin. He decides he needs to leave and get help. And
he was going to get the car and bring the car back.
Yeah. So he gets the, I believe he tries to get the car. The car's not working. He comes back in and then he's with the family. And then it's kind of like, what are we going to do? And then he's like, well, I'm going to go get help. And then you just get like these succession of shots on Felix and Z looking at him very like strangely, like, what do you mean? Rewatching it, you go, they're looking at him being like, you baby. Listen, Rachel, we on the podcast here, we love the use of the word weenie and wuss because it's not used anymore. This is like a 90s thing that did not translate. So we love it.
Come to me. My vocabulary is very old.
Yeah. So then they decide to move Drake, his body behind a curtain and just kind of like, well,
let him go.
Leave him here. Let him like, sleep.
Maybe he'll survive here. Just going to put him to the side.
So then we get this cool scene where Erin goes and she just grabs all the weapons she can. She's like, all right, we need to defend ourselves. And it's like, that's what I'm talking about, Erin. And then she was bringing the knives in, weapons, knives, whatever. Tiger Mask, he breaks in through the window, comes in and attacks her. He like throws the axe down, tries to hit her. She rolls out of the way, kicks him in the nuts. He goes down and then she takes a meat tenderizer and just destroys him. It's so brutal, but you can tell like by that point, like the blood is flowing. Like she's like, I'm in this. I'm going to finish him off so he doesn't come and attack me.
Adrenaline is high.
Felix and Z are just kind of like watching in horror, kind of realizing who they're up against at this point.
And I love that it's like she's like an action hero because she like she pulls the mask off and holds the guy's head up and is like, anyone know this guy? And then they go, it's kind of hard to tell.
They're like iconic, the one-liners from action movies. I have to tenderize some chicken tonight for dinner, so it's going to be very interesting when I'm going to feel like I'm Erin tonight.
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, this is also what separates her from the more traditional final girl is because, you know, at first they don't always make sure they're dead, but she knows right away, make sure they're dead. And she just goes for it. There's no question.
Yeah.
You know, some final girls make that mistake and pops up again.
Well, and then at that point, it's like everyone knows she's the danger, like the rest of the movie, you know? Yeah.
It's weird because the tables do kind of turn where you're rooting for her, but you're also like, oh my God, kind of thing. So it's very interesting the tonal shift that the movie does as a whole.
So then we get into the scene that we were discussing earlier where Paul, the dad, finds that these killers have been staying in the house. They find like sleeping bags and bottles of pee and stuff like that. And, you know, we can debate all we want why they didn't just like, you know, chill in the house. You know, maybe just sleep in one of the beds and then make the bed. I don't know. Like, no one's going to remember like, oh, when I was here, you know, 2 years ago, the pillows were switched. The pillows were switched. Who knows? But
I didn't have covers on them.
If Felix and Z aren't really buying it or don't seem too interested, then Fox Mask, he appears and he slits Paul's throat with a machete and the father's dying and he reaches out to Felix and he's not acting like you would expect someone to act watching their father die in front of them. He just kind of seems like get on with it. And, you know, he kind of just looks a little annoyed. And then it's at this point in the film when it's revealed that that Felix has hired these killers to murder his family so he can get his inheritance. Whenever a grown man, especially a grown man named Felix, uses the word inheritance, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to be friends. I don't know if he's going to be in my fantasy baseball
league. How quickly does inheritance kick in? Like,
I don't know.
Okay, they die, so you get it the next day? Like,
I don't have any friends that ever discuss inheritance. Yeah. Like, and if I did, I would suspect that they might hire killers for one reason or another. But, I mean, does it have to be over a certain amount to be an inheritance? Like, if someone leaves me like a $3,000 check, is that an inheritance or does it? I just picture like wheelbarrows of gold and stuff too. Like, yeah. Is there, yeah. What's the criteria for inheritance? I don't know.
I wish I did. I don't think they mentioned the quantity, do they?
No, it's just enough to just get them out of this financial trouble they're in. I don't know. It could have probably just asked them for money. Felix says something to the extent of like, really had to do that in front of me. Like, that's messed up, man. Like, Felix has his limits. Like, he will pay to have his family murdered. But if you make him watch, that's messed up, man. That's crossing a line.
I just imagine when his father like reaches out and touches his cheek and there's blood, that the actual sound you would hear is him going,
oh, gross. It's making me nauseous. And so he asks the killer why he did it in front of him, and Fox Mask takes his mask off. He's got earbuds in, and he's just gone through the motions. He takes him out. He's like, oh, what'd you say? Did you say something? So yeah, we get a little, which is, I think that's a nice touch. We get a nice little glimpse into, you know, the sociopathic nature of these killers, and they're just, you know, hired hands, and they're just out to finish a job at this point. Mm-hmm. So then Lamb Mask finds Tiger Mask's body in the dining room, and he's obviously dead. We established that earlier. And he's not happy about it. He starts flipping out. He flips over the dinner table, which probably would have been flipped over at one point or another in this night anyway.
I'm genuinely surprised it took that long for the table to be flipped.
So that was inevitable.
I'm surprised dishes were still intact.
So Drake wakes up from his curtain nap, and I guess that acts as like a little distraction. And then Aaron comes up from the basement and stabs Lamb Mask with a screwdriver, and
Stuff where people get stabbed in the back, like things going into people's backs. It's like,
is it saying something? There's a lot of backstabbing in the movie, John. And that's our show, everybody. Tune in next week. Now Aaron and Z are making these little Home Alone nail trap type things, and they're just basically putting them at the entrances and by the windows, so if they jump in, it impales their foot. And I guess we get to this a little bit later, but it's a nice strategy because from the outside of the window perspective, you can see one of them, the nails, and you can try to avoid it, but not so fast. They put one directly under the window. So if you try to short that one, you're still going to hit one that you can't see. So that's smart. If anybody's ever in this situation, remember that. You take one thing away from this episode.
Survival skills.
Yeah. So this is... this is when Aaron reveals that she was raised by these survivalists. Her family was like, didn't she say her dad was like really paranoid about something?
He was paranoid that the world was going to end, like just out of nowhere. So they moved. She moved with her dad to a compound and learned all the survivalist skills. And then I think she moved in with her mom and then came to the States from her. I believe, something like that. But yeah, she got everything that she needed to learn survival-wise from the compound and living out in the outback, basically. And if you watch Australian horror films, I'm not surprised by any of this at all.
Yeah, I mean, I watched, what was it, Wolf Creek was one of those that's like, that messed me up a little bit when I was younger.
I love Australian horror films, but yeah, definitely need those survivalist skills. So it's not a surprise whatsoever.
I just picture her dad being like one of like, say you're out of touch, you know, great uncles on Facebook that always posts about stocking up for something that's going to happen. He always has insider info that something's going to happen. And then this, like her dad is the guy that's like playing it out, like in reality, like just always assuming something terrible is going to happen and needing to prepare for it. So,
yeah, and I picture him looking like Russ Tamblyn, if you know who that actor is. Who is the actor that's like absolutely has gone crazy lately?
There's a few.
So at this point, we find out that, you know, Aaron is not going to be as simple of a target as as Felix and Z had hoped. So isn't there even a little moment here where Z debates like hitting her with one of the wood boards and then like she's like, oh, what? Nothing.
I love that because it's like kind of cartoony where she's holding her like, I'm going to get you. And then just like, oh, yeah, you know, here you go.
Like, oh, good. You done with that one? I was just looking for that. Yeah, I don't. That's a weird move. Like what was her hesitation? Because she's clearly not, you know, above killing people.
She's afraid like, she'll miss and then she'll be done.
That, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I feel like Z might be a little bit chicken. Like she's bold in her actions, like asking Felix to do it next to his dead mom. But like I think when it comes to actually fulfilling the task, she's like, I can't do it.
Yeah, she didn't think that one strike would even kill her probably, and then she'd still be dead. Plus there's still two hired killers left, so let's let them do their job. But at, you know, in hindsight, that might have been their best shot you know, to get rid of her, but we'll never know. So now we're down in the basement, and so Drake is barely alive. He's just bleeding out this whole movie, and people just keep moving him from one place to another.
Drake is the Bob Barker of horror movies at this point. Like, he just still keeps going. He's an Energizer bunny.
So
they gave him pills, so he's okay.
Yeah, he took Vicodin, right? Yeah.
So he just doesn't feel anything.
Yeah. What did he say earlier in the film when his like wife avoids his passes? He's like, oh, got any Vicodin?
Yep. And he says it again when he has the arrow in his back and he falls to the floor. He's like, any Vicodin?
Yeah, his mom gives him some. So now Felix, I guess, just feels like he needs to finish the job. I'm not sure really what his motivation is. Like, maybe he thinks he's closer to death than he realizes and just wants to do it. Doesn't feel like waiting for the other guys because he's like, you know, I had to do what you couldn't. But then he stabs him a lot, and it's a really like unsettling scene.
Well, he keeps taking tools and using different tools to jab him.
And then he screams at one point, "Why won't you die?"
Yeah, and they're all just stuck in him.
You think he's having a great time? Like, I don't.
That's how self-absorbed they are. Is they're like, think about how hard this is for me when I'm stabbing you to death, and he leaves all the tools in him. He doesn't reuse any of them, which probably would have been faster if he just like repeatedly stabbed.
Especially like if you're gonna have a murder scene where cops are coming later, they're gonna be like, everyone else is like brutally murdered, like quick kills, and then there's this one where it's like, who was the wimp ass that did this one? He's like multiple different stab things. Like it would be like, it doesn't seem similar at all to the rest of these murders. Must have been some sort of, you know, fail son that couldn't commit to it, you know?
It's always the fail sons. So at this point, Erin goes upstairs to check on Paul. Paul's dead. She's attacked by Foxmask, and then she jumps out the window, and this is one of, you have a note here, John, isn't this reference to a Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Is that
Because Sally does that in where
similar
it's like
fall.
Immediately when she's like cornered, she's like, out the window, we're just going for it.
Yep. Yeah.
Laurie Strode does that too in one of the Halloweens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Duh.
Yeah. It's always right through the window. I mean, takes what, 2 seconds to open a window? I guess if it's locked. So then there's glass everywhere. There's a lot of glass in this movie. There's glass in her leg, and it's huge. It's an eighth of the window, probably.
Oh my God.
It's a big chunk.
When she pulls it out at first, you think, oh, it's like kind of a little piece, and then it keeps going, and you're like, this is the longest shard of glass I've ever seen. Jesus. And then she's limping the rest of the movie. And yet that doesn't really stop her too much, like killing the rest of them, even though she's like, you know, has trouble, like mobility issues.
Yeah, she learned it in survivalist camp. So she gets chased for a little bit by Lamb Mask. And then she runs back inside. This is an interesting move by our final girl, because normally maybe the final girl would run away at this point or go to the neighbors because, you know, she might still think the neighbors are alive or we end up in the woods. But I think she feels like she has an advantage in this house. And so she kind of runs back inside. And then this is when, you know, the one killer steps into the window and then he gets a nail right through his foot. Looks very painful. You get a nice close-up of that, too.
I would honestly probably rather take the ornaments in Home Alone than a nail to the foot. Even though a nail to the foot happens in Home Alone 2?
I think it's in the first one, because he steps on the... It's like the tar up the steps.
Is it one? I can't
remember. Oh, yeah, I think it might have been both. I don't know.
Honestly, probably could have been both. But yeah, that sounds just absolutely painful in general. I've stepped on something that went through my shoe once when I worked in retail. Oh my gosh, I'll never forget it. Then they're like, get tennis shot.
It's your whole body weight driving it down. It's just like it butter, you know?
It's not fun.
Oh man. So you would take the ornaments over the nail. I'd probably
take ornaments over nail.
Here's a counterpoint to this. Okay. I don't know about ornaments, but glass or something. No. So like a nail goes in your foot. You pull it off. That nail's out. That's it. All you got to do is heal. If you got glass in your foot, like you got to pick it out. You got mobility issues of as you're walking, it's getting worse. Things like that. Die
it
hard
does cover. It covers more surface area too. The glass, you know,
yeah,
it could be
all
over your foot.
It'll hurt.
So anyway, so now we're back upstairs and we have the scene Rachel was talking about earlier. We got Z, who is really turned on by all of this, and she wants to have sex with Felix next to his mom's corpse, and he's not quite into it. He's not into it, but he's mostly he's mostly not into it.
He's thrown off by this. And then what if she says something like, we never have any fun anymore?
You don't do anything fun. And he's like,
this is fun for you. This is money for me, you know.
So she thinks he's a wuss. So then they go downstairs and they're all kind of arguing at this point. Like, stuff has kind of gone off the rails and, you know, Felix isn't happy about it. He's really mopey. Like, as soon as things...
He starts, like, delegating work. Like, go down there, figure out what's going on. He's yelling at these guys. Like, they're like, you're the hired help. And...
Yeah.
Because of, you know, we find out that the tiger mask was actually brothers with one of the other guys. And there's like, well, that was my brother. And he goes, oh, I didn't know. I thought that was just a guy you served with. And he goes, well, I actually like my brother. You know? Which I think that's such a good line, because it shows that even though these guys are like doing this as a for hire thing, they do think morally these kids are pieces of shit.
They would never do that to family, you know? Even though they would kill someone else's family for money, they would never do that to their own family.
So I think that's just an interesting way that they like show the difference there, that they have like a certain moral standing that the others.
Yeah. All right. So at this point, we see Erin upstairs and she gets a text on her phone confirming that her 911 text went through earlier. So what this tells us basically is, you know, the cops are aware of this. They're more than likely on their way. So they couldn't get cell reception. I don't even know if we mentioned this. There's no cell reception earlier in the film. And then Felix gives a very specific explanation of why that is. He says, you know, you can buy these cell phone jammers on Amazon. They're like $29.99. And like, he's oddly specific about it. And that was kind of like, that was odd in that moment. And like, you kind of think it's like, part of the humor of that scene or something. But then it actually ends up making a lot more sense when you found out he hired him and more than likely bought the jammer on Amazon. So now she's able to get a text through.
Well, the noise of the text is what alerts. It alerts the rest of them that she's right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we get a cool little scene where she like, one of the guys opens the curtain and she like jabs him in the throat.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. And like, she's getting ready for it, like Kung Fu kind of like, she has like a stance or whatever. Like that's boss. I don't know. So she goes outside and then turns to the right and just goes right back into the window. So they like go chase after her outside. One of the killers thinks, huh, maybe she went into that window. He goes to lean in to see if she's in there, and then she like stabs him in the head. and then he's down, and we get this super awesome shot of her holding like the axe, And it's like almost like a hero moment, like shot, like she's like this kind of like stance.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so badass.
Yeah.
So then the rest of these idiots are outside debating what to do next, where to look for her, whatever. So they split up or whatever. And Fox Mask, I guess, decides to go back in. Meanwhile, while this is happening, Erin goes, she sets up a Home Alone style trap with the axe to like fall down when you open the front door. It'll just kill whoever walks in the door.
It reminds me of the game Mousetrap. Like, you know, at the very end where it's like the very end, you get the mouse, the cage falls down or whatever. That's what it reminds me of.
That's a good comparison.
So then we have, so she sets that up. Then she goes down to the basement and sets up a camera to keep flashing, taking pictures. And then she breaks all the lights downstairs so you can, if someone walks by, she can hear them stepping on the light bulb.
This is such a cool sequence.
Like, yeah. Fox Mask eventually goes to the basement and he's walking through and he's like trying to find her, but he's like hesitant. He's walking slow. The flashes are coming at him. He can't see anything. And then when she hears him step on one of the light bulb things, she just fucking beats his head in. And he's dead. Again, she goes a little crazy with it, but we can't blame her. She's got to make sure he is no longer a threat.
So this sequence from like a cinematography perspective, it's like it's pitch black and like you really only see what's happening when the cameras flash. So it's this really kind of jarring sequence. And, you know, you catch glimpses of, you know, the pulpy remains of his face after she's done like beating him to death.
Oh, my God. So then she goes upstairs and she's almost shot by Felix, which Felix celebrates prematurely, thinking he got her.
It's like, I got her, right?
Babe, you saw that. I got her. Like, okay, you get a do-over, I guess, because you try hard. And so they like chase her into the kitchen and there's a huge struggle there. And then we get to Rachel's favorite scene, everyone's favorite, I guess, sequence is she beats him to death with a blender, basically, then plugs the blender in, and then it's like ruins his mushes up his brain further.
Oh yeah,
oh, it's so good.
And she pulls a knife out of her back to kill Z, which I would have trouble just actually getting the knife. Touching the handle.
I don't think I can even touch the center of my the back. You know.
Yeah, but she manages it, and there's a knife there, and she takes it out, and then kills. Yeah. Z, which I mean, it's kind of funny though, they have to like add like a little extra work for Erin to kill Z because Z is not really much of a threat like whatsoever.
None. But I always have liked the moment right, like literally right after that happens where she just sits down, she's like, you know, catches her breath for finally like the first time in the whole movie.
And there's the two corpses when the blender's still on his head.
It's so good.
We should mention what led up to this, actually, right before this, when they're in the kitchen, Erin takes a pot of water and throws it at Felix. And, you know, we're accustomed in movies when somebody throws water on someone that's off, coming off of a stove that it's hot. But it had been sitting there for a while.
Yeah.
So like Felix just kind of scoffs at her. He's like, so not even hot. And like goes to take a step forward and slips on the water. And that's that's
a good sequence. It's such a good sequence though. It's just like what you're expecting, you know, expectations versus reality kind of thing. So
And then we get a pretty cool scene where we get the Felix's phone starts ringing and it's Crispin and he's like, is it done yet? He's like, please talk to me. I'm sorry, you know.
And that's when Erin finds out.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty cool reveal. I mean, like, you have the first kind of twist that, you know, some of the family members are in on it, which, you know, you may or may not see coming. And then you're kind of wondering Crispin's role in all of this. Like, I know at least I was. I mean, looking back,
he also disappears for like a while.
You can see, you know, once you know that he's involved, you know, looking back, you understand why Felix and Z are not happy with him because he's basically, you know, chickening out and he's gonna sit this one out on the sidelines and like he's just like waiting, like, you guys done yet? But yeah, I was like, I was wondering how the end of the movie is going to kind of play out. And I really like this little like, final twist, I guess.
And you know, he like shows up, and then I like that he tries to just give her like a very convincing, like, hey, just take the money. Are you stupid? Kind of thing.
Dude, he like, it's so, I so don't buy it when he's like, oh, like, good, you're still alive. That was the whole idea.
Well, because it's like, I mean, it's not really stated, but it's like she, or proven that this is how he feels or anything, but it's like she is like, you know, she's a younger girlfriend, like maybe that didn't really mean that much to him, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but I like that she just doesn't put up with it and just kills him on the spot. Then at the same time, a cop shoots her in the shoulder. It seemed like it was almost like, so this whole movie, she's like, she's being attacked and then defending herself. And then the end of the movie, it's like the cops are like helping out the rich family, almost like they're like, oh, she's the bad guy because she's killing him.
Yeah, because I think it's like how they catch her in that moment, in that act. Yeah. Like if it was reversed, there probably be a different outcome. But since it's, you know, whoever sees what they see, that's what you know, they think what's going on. And she is the one that's doing this to the entire family.
Yeah. And the cop kind of freaked too, because he's like the only one on the scene at this point and just like probably wasn't expecting this massacre. So he just sees somebody with a corpse and a knife. And
well, you wonder, though, what's going to be the future there with what happened there? Because, you know, the cop shoots her. Then, you know, we see later he opens the door and he's getting killed by that axe. Like, is she going to walk away from this as like a hero, or they're going to view her as like the killer who killed off the whole family and all this other stuff, you know?
It's going to be hard for her to talk her way out of that one.
Yeah. It's so open-ended as an ending in a whole that it's just like, oh, it could happen in so many doors. And that's kind of endings that I enjoy, because you have to kind of figure out, or you can basically create your own ending.
Mm-hmm. I was, from the moment she set the little mousetrap axe thing on the door, I was like, who's this gonna go off on? Like, I know it's gonna be like our last shot, and like I was like, oh, is it him? And then everybody just like from then on just like steps through the window, like casually. like it's the entrance now.
Come on,
like, it's already broken, like let's just step in. I thought it was gonna end with Aaron trying to kill Crispin, and then Crispin like gets away and he goes to run out the door. And it like hits him in the back as he goes out. But then as he dies, that's when the cops are like approaching. So then she's still in like the same predicament she's in now. Like, how is she going to talk her way?
Wouldn't it have been great if that had been the ending? And like, but she gets Crispin from behind. But as Crispin goes out the door, he gets the, you know, razor.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, boom, boom. And he falls.
That would be a great, like, little twist on that, because it's like he probably put it up, you know.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Also, I just like when the axe comes down at the very end, like the title comes up, you're next, and it's like the blood splatter and all that, and it's just like, I don't know, I just like that, because it's like, folks, we're having fun, aren't we? Like, I just think that's a great way to end it, you know.
Yeah. I could have seen them getting to the end of the script. They're like, what do we call this? Then just like have them write something in blood on the wall and then just call it that. Like, and then it works.
It does.
I was looking up some writing on this movie. There's really not a whole lot, or at least from what I saw. But I guess there was someone who wrote something about the movie, but it looked like it might have been translated or something. So like they kept referring to the movie as, "You are the one who is next."
That's great.
And I was like, I kind of love that.
You are the one that is
next. It requires too much blood, John.
Yeah.
They couldn't write it all in one scene.
Yeah. Like, you seriously, I can't just say you're next. You are the one who is next. That's what you want to say.
The blood dried up when they got to the word one.
So, all right. So at this point in the series, we've seen Peeping Tom, Psycho, Texas Chainsaw, Black Christmas, Halloween, Nightmare, Scream, Behind the Mask. And now we got You're Next added here. You know, we've kind of talked about this throughout, because it is kind of a movie that's about the tropes a bit too. And like, it zigs when you think it's going to zag. And I think you know, it's a different way that it is talking about the genre. You know, it's still viscerally, it's really good. It's also funny, but in a little different way. And it's winking at the camera a little bit. And it's, I enjoyed the way that it kind of adds to like these other slasher films that came before it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. You know, it feels fresh. It knew what it wanted to kind of expand on. It knew what cliches it wanted to draw its attention to. You know, it knew a little bit of the satire and the homage that it wanted to be. But it feels fresh. And I love the angle of having multiple killers. We haven't really seen that yet. I guess Texas Chainsaw Massacre a little bit. They were kind of like a team.
Scream.
Yeah. We do realize there were two. But the fact that there are two is more of a reveal. It's not like, you know, part of the film and part of their objective is to, you know, outsmart.
But also it's killers. It's also interesting how it's like you could look at this movie, at least in the second half, that she's the slasher like killer that.
Yeah,
they're like,
it's great.
They're defending themselves against her wrath.
Yeah. So there's definitely like there's touches of Scream in here. You know, the home invasion aspect, you know, that the fact that it's kind of most of it's right in this house is kind of feels like Black Christmas a little bit, you know, or we're up and down a lot of stairs in that one. And, you know, I feel like Aaron would be like if Sidney Prescott grew up in like a survivalist.
I can see that for sure.
Or even I would say if you look at these movies came out around the same time, but Scream 4, Sidney and Scream 4 is quite the badass where there's like, oh, something's going down. She's running into the house to go after whoever is dressed as like, you know, Ghostface now.
Yeah.
Well, another thing is like, so sometimes in movies when they have like a badass like woman character, sometimes it kind of feels like they're really just coding the character as like a male, but is played by a woman. And I like how she is like, it's not like she's like out of nowhere, just like destroying people. And it doesn't seem realistic or something. Like it's just like physicality wise or something. It's like, no, like she's not like an action star or whatever, but she is smarter. She outsmarts them and she knows how to do certain things that like, okay, you know, someone's attacking you with an axe, roll out of the way, kick him in the nuts. He's down, bash his head in. Like it, she bests them, but it doesn't seem like unrealistic or something, or like
it's very grounded in
in
reality that technically this could happen. And that you can utilize things around you as weapons instead of resorting to getting, you know, the best of the best or something like that, you know.
Yeah, and it all feels very earned, like that goes back to being, you know, such a great script. And
well, also because, you know, the guys are like the way they go about things is just through like sheer brutality, and then she is like able to like outmaneuver them constantly, that it's almost like it's funny how much she like kind of just can like sense what they're gonna do, and then she just reverses it in a way. Yeah,
that's an interesting dynamic too. It's like it feels like these killers are the most mortal, I guess, of all these killers. You know, they don't really have this supernatural aura about them like some of the previous ones where it's like, you know, these guys can't die. It's like they literally went into it overly confident, thinking there's no way some chick who grew up on a survivalist camp, you know, is ever going to be here and you know, outduel us. So they just, you know, like you said, they're just relying on like brute strength, and she's here outsmarting them.
Yeah, they're big dum-dums. Basically,
like I said, they're very bad veterans. Like they weren't the best options for, you know.
Maybe they embellished their like resume. Like they're like, oh, what did you do over in Afghanistan?
I did many tours.
Well, yeah, it's like I did paperwork.
Yeah,
I did marketing. So
I handed out pamphlets at the mall. You got to keep in mind too, Felix is always crying poor throughout this whole movie, so he probably went to like budget killers, and
that is true. You know,
he doesn't want to pay him that much, so he probably went to one of the cheaper options because he wants to keep as much of his inheritance as possible.
Well, okay, so I think the question is then, Jason, do you think you'd survive this killer?
This is a tough one because there's a lot of people killing in this one. I always try to think of like who I would be and where I would fall into this mix. I might be the filmmaker boyfriend character, which means I'm dead first. So, if I didn't die first, I certainly don't have the survival instincts. You know, I think I'm dead this time. I mean, I can't justify how I would stay alive. So I'm dead. John, what about you?
Okay. So I was like trying to think, is there any way I can weasel out of this? And
so you think about like every scenario.
Would you say?
That's what you think about every scenario. Like, how can I weasel out of this?
Well, I was like, well, could I, you know, I don't think I'm bringing much to the table that they would like, you know, let me in on this, the scam going on or whatever. Although I don't know if I would ever be at like a rich family's house for dinner. I don't really see myself being invited to a lot of, you know, polite company. But if I was in that house for some reason, I probably would die.
John, I feel like you would live. I feel like what would happen is dinner would be at 7 and 7:30 would roll around and you wouldn't be there yet. And the killers would just be impatient and start killing. And then by the time you're close, the cell interrupter will have cut your GPS. So you wouldn't have even made it to the house.
Yeah, I would have been like, I gotta go back. I don't know where I'm going.
In that neighborhood, and you would have went and chilled at like a Wawa until somebody got back to you. You're alive, John.
Oh my God.
There has been times where I've gone certain places and I don't know what the spread will be for dinner. So I will stop at Wawa first for like a like a shorty sub. So like, I'll be like, well, I'm only too hungry. So, Rachel, what about you?
Okay. So there's two scenarios of a yes or a no, which doesn't really give you a full answer. But I like the thing about putting myself in the movie, see who I would be. I'd probably be Amy Simons. I'd probably get my neck wrung on a wire in a heartbeat. But realistically speaking, I would probably be the daughter that would made up an excuse not to go. So I'd be watching something else and be like, oh, I'm alive. And then find out later on the news that my entire family is deceased.
And then you'd get the inheritance.
Exactly. Like, then I get the inheritance and I didn't even try. So, and then I'd
Thanks,
be like,
Aaron.
Yeah. And then I'd be BFF with Aaron and be like, all right, listen. You didn't kill my family, but you killed everybody that needed to be killed, so.
Yeah. All right, let's watch some movies.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can do all this in real life. We can watch some action movies. You could tell me, is that how it would really happen?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Is this possible?
Start an action movie podcast or something. I don't know. I like this scenario where you're like best friends with Aaron, so that's cool.
Would love.
I mean, that is your MO, you being friends with
everybody.
cool celebrities.
Everyone that I can meet.
All right. Anything else, or are we good?
I think we're good. Just everybody should watch it.
Go watch the movie. If you haven't seen it, you know, don't be Jason. Don't see half of a movie.
Watch it on your phone.
Or watch it on your, yeah. I mean, I would say almost though that it is like a testament to how good the movie is that you watch it on your phone and
still
enjoy.
Held up.
Yeah. And you're like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it was actually kind of cool. Like it was like a little late night horror movie under the blankets.
Make yourself a little fort. I'm 12 again.
This is taking a turn.
Don't all right. Podcasts.
Yeah. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, that does it for this week's episode. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And next week, we will be reviewing It Follows.
So good.
Until then,
stab you later. Late night horror movie under the blankets.